Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. This show is heard on WBCQ, The Planet, every Monday and Thursday evening at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is also heard on Podomatic.com, and on we occasionally upload the shows onto our YouTube channel as well. Not all of them, but most of them. And our YouTube channel, of course, is called Camp Constitution, so please subscribe if you have a chance to do that and share the videos with as many people as you can. It is brought to you by Camp Constitution, which, among other things, runs a week-long family camp. And next year's camp will run from July 19th to the 24th at the beautiful Singing Hills Christian Camp and Conference Center in Plainfield, New Hampshire. And for more information, visit our website, campconstitution.net. Before I get into the show, I just want to mention that a dear friend of mine and a longtime Camp Constitution supporter, Mrs. Shirley Lane of Lexington, passed away. Her legacy will live on. She and her dear late husband, Andy, were one of the greatest reasons why we exist. They've been such a blessing to our camp program, and we're going to miss them, but their legacy will live on through organizations like Camp Constitution. They just had a great love of America. Shirley was a member of the Daughters of the American Revolution, dedicated her life to promote liberty, along with her late husband, who died in October of 2007. But one of the reasons why we exist is because of their legacy. So just want to mention that in passing. She was a remarkable lady. Now, this weekend, we celebrated those who love liberty and freedom anyway, and Americanism celebrated Columbus Day, October 12th. Of course, Monday the 14th was the day it was actually celebrated, but on October 12th, 1492, Columbus landed on what has became known as San Salvador and is credited to discovering America. And yes, we know that there have been others that came here, the Norsemen, but there was no settlement, and there wasn't much knowledge of the continent in Europe at the time. In fact, there was no knowledge of it. So even though they were here before, it wasn't something that was known to the Europeans. And the cultural Marxists, I have to say, they have done an incredible job to destroy and smear and vilify the memories, the historical facts, memories of great men and women. And Columbus is another victim. The cultural Marxists will tell us that he came to the New World to exploit, to murder, to rape. He spread disease and genocide and slavery. You would think that was his only motivation, was just to come out here and whatever he discovered, he would destroy. And that is one of the greatest lies. And of course, the same thing goes with, you know, Thanksgiving and the pilgrims, and then Christmas will come around and the evils of Christianity. And, you know, then, and of course, then they celebrate the Martin Luther King in January. He was this great hero. And, you know, then we get into February and it's George Washington is trashed, et cetera, et cetera. But that's why it's so important to have an understanding of the background. And one of the best ways to fight the cultural Marxists is to be able to learn about our history and then defend it and then promote the truth about it. And one of the things is that, of course, there was no perfect human being. And yes, there were a lot of excesses done by the Spanish conquistadors over the years, and of course, then the English and the various settlers against the Indians. We're not denying that. In fact, one of the few nations, when people learn about their nation's history, one of the few countries that sort of talks about warts and all is the United States. You won't go to a Japanese student history book and learn about Pearl Harbor or the rape of Nanking and the atrocities that Japanese committed throughout the years. You won't learn about that. in other countries. You're not going to learn about the genocide in communist China. You're not going to learn about the genocide and murder and execution of innocent people in communist Cuba's classrooms. So, but to set the record straight on Christopher Columbus, I think there's a couple of books that I want to recommend. One of them is by John Eismo. It's called Columbus and Cortez. And that book is available on Amazon. And I think Columbus and Cortez, Conquerors for Christ is the full name of the book. There's a little book that I recently discovered, and I had the author on the air here, interviewed him about a month ago. It's called History's Greatest Libels, A Challenge to Some of the Great Lies of History by Steve Baez. And you know, it doesn't go into exhaustive detail about Christopher Columbus, but it's a great, you know, like little thumbnail. It gives some really good facts about him. And then there's the great Samuel Eliot Morison's work. He was probably one of the top historians on the subject of Christopher Columbus. It was interesting, too. So he actually has Admiral of the Ocean Sea is his book. And it's, I think, several volumes and this condensed version of that as well. And he, of course, did exhaustive research into Columbus and, you know, truth versus fiction. Now, I think in the eyes of the left, the greatest crime that Columbus committed was to bring Christianity to the Americas. Indians, he referred to them as Indians, and I guess the background is an important background. The purpose of the voyage wasn't to make lots of money and exploit the natives or whatever he found. The purpose was first to find a route to the east. The Muslims had conquered Constantinople. They had conquered a lot of the Middle East. The city of Jerusalem was in Muslim hands. And he believed that the Chinese would be very receptive to the gospel of Christianity, the gospel of Christ. And he thought that that he would be able to go over there, establish relations with them, introduce them to Christianity, and then they would help fight the Muslims. And the money he was making, he would get 10% of whatever was found, whether gold or whatever of anything valuable. He wanted it to be used to for this crusade, a new crusade to free the holy city of Jerusalem. And that's something that most Americans, even those who support his memory, don't know. You probably didn't learn that. And one of the greatest myths of the day was up today was that people back in his day thought the world was flat. Well, that's a flat out lie. I guess it was Washington Irving that promoted that idea. Indeed, the people of his day didn't think the world was flat. They thought the world was smaller. And they attributed that to Marco Polo. He made an inaccurate estimation of the size of the earth. And there's also some Muslim navigators that had some misinformation that, I guess, from what I understand, that Columbus was referring. So when he landed in San Salvador, and the Indians that he encountered, or the people he encountered, he called them Indians, thinking that they were from India. It was not meant as a pejorative term. In fact, the term Native American or Indians is really irrelevant, you know. And he had great admiration for the Indians. He believed that they would be very receptive to the gospel of Christ, and some of them, of course, were. He made four journeys to the New World. The first journey, of course, was the three famous ships, the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria. And they were the members of the crew that were all set that they just wanted him to turn back. They were going to mutiny because they were just concerned that they weren't going to find land. And he said, just give it a couple more days. They found some birds. I think it was a few days or maybe a week before they actually found land. And you know, one of the men on the ship there said land, and this would be tierra, I think was the word, or terra in Spanish. And they found San Salvador. Now, what he did discover that slavery was already in existence in the New World. In fact, the Caribs were one of the tribes of Indians that he encountered. That's where the word Caribbean comes from. The Caribs were, not only did they engage in slavery, but they engaged in cannibalism and sodomy, among other things. And he did war with them with the help of the other Indians, and he did send a few to Spain as prisoners or slaves, thinking that they had to get away from the environment that they were in, and by sending them to Spain that they would convert to Christianity. Then he was accused of committing genocide, millions and millions of people. And Haiti was an island where there was a crew that he sent there, and they had a colony. And he told them to have good rapport, do not go far inland. He told them that they should have nothing but treat the Indians with respect. And the members of the crew didn't do that. And as a result, the natives, Indians, killed them. And that was not Columbus's doing. And it is one of the left-wing historians make the claim that there were 8 million people living in Haiti, and within a short time, there was only 1 million left. So Columbus was responsible for the deaths of 7 million. It would have been impossible, if he was engaged in genocide, for such a small group of people to kill so many people in such a short span of time. That's a complete lie. Now, there is an unfortunate thing that happened when the Europeans met the native Indians, is that they got diseases from the white man. The Europeans had resistance to some of the diseases, but the Indians did not. They didn't have the immunities, and a lot of them died of smallpox. That was not an intended consequence, and some suggest it was inevitable when the two groups eventually would have to meet. But we did get something. We Europeans got something from the Indians, and that would be syphilis. And it wasn't as devastating as the smallpox, but depending on different historians, about 5 million Europeans died as a result of syphilis. And that's something you're not going to learn in most of your government schools. But Columbus was a great navigator. And what he did paved the way to bring Christianity to this new world, as well as many more explorers, and eventually what became known as the United States. And that's really his great crime. You see, the left despises Christianity, and that's his greatest crime. And he was a devout Christian. And what's interesting, too, is that a lot of his papers are available. There isn't any new facts coming out about Columbus. And so it's just a tragic that he's one of the many people that have become under such scrutiny today and such contempt and hatred. People want to take his statues down, these leftists, and some states of Maine, I think, they celebrate Indigenous Day. They don't even say Indian Day. They say Indigenous People's Day or something like that. And while many of the Indians were peaceful, there were many that were not. I mentioned the Caribs just a few minutes ago. What a lot of historians don't tell you is that the Aztecs, for example, were one of the most cruelest regimes in the history of mankind. The Aztecs believed that you had to placate these gods, and to do that, you had to use the hearts of humans. So they estimate about 20,000 people were put to death every year by the Aztec priests. And the Aztecs were conquered not just by a small band of Spaniards, but by also by the other neighboring tribes who detested the Aztecs for the horrible things they did. They did this to their own people as well as to the other Indian tribes, and they were engaged in the slave trade as well. So these Indians, these Aztec priests, would rip the hearts out of people as they were alive, and they just tie them up and just reach and rip their hearts out and drink their blood. Well, thanks to Christianity, this was put to a stop. Now, I'm sure the left has no trouble with these types of practices because they were native. This is what the natives did, so whatever they did was okay. And I mentioned the Caribbeans. that they were engaged in sodomy. They also would catch and castrate children and fatten them up. They found bones of the people they ate in their huts, and they were just indescribably filthy. This is the pre-Columbian natives. That they were, things weren't so great, and these people weren't all peaceful, peace-loving, simplistic natives. These people were brutes, and a lot of this came to an end thanks to Christianity, thanks to what Columbus did, what he accomplished. And it was in 1892, and our camp blog has the proclamation that Benjamin Harris wrote. That's the first time that it was actually Columbus Day was recommended that people set aside time to remember him from his memory and learn about his memory. They considered him one of the greatest men of all time. And what I'd like to do here is read the proclamation. It's not that long. And see if I can just go to the website here and get it. I found this. You can easily find it on. It was this Benjamin Harrison, President Benjamin Harrison's proclamation. Whereas, by a joint resolution approved June 29, 1892, it was resolved by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled that the President of the United States shall be authorized and directed to issue a proclamation recommending to the people the observance in all their localities of the 400th anniversary of the discovery of America on the 21st of October, 1892. By public demonstrations and by suitable exercises in their schools and other places of assembly. Now, therefore, I, Benjamin Harrison, President of the United States of America, in pursuance of the aforesaid joint resolution, do hereby appoint Friday, October 21st, 1892, the 400th anniversary of the discovery of America by Columbus, as a general holiday for the people of the United States. On that day, let the people, so far as possible, cease from toil and devote themselves to such exercises as may best express honor to the discoverer and their appreciation of the great achievements of the four completed centuries of American life. Columbus stood in his age as a pioneer of progress and enlightenment. The system of universal education is in our age the most prominent and salutary feature of the spirit of enlightenment, and it is particularly appropriate that the schools be made by the people the center of the day's demonstration. Let the national flag float over every schoolhouse in the country, and the exercise be such as shall impress upon our youth the patriotic duties of American citizenship. In the churches and in other places of assembly of the people, let there be expressions of gratitude to divine providence for the devout faith of this discoverer and for the divine care and guidance which has directed our history and so abundantly blessed our people. In testimony whereof I have hereunto set my hand and caused the seal of the United States to be affixed, done in the city of Washington, D.C., 21st day of July, A.D., 1892, and of the independence of the United States, the 117th. Can you imagine, I could see President Trump signing a proclamation similar to this, but I can't imagine too many others in the last 20 or so years doing such things. So here he was encouraging us to honor his memory and, of course, the 400 years of our history. And here he was. This is the President of the United States encouraging churches, let there be expressions of gratitude to divine providence for the devout faith of the discoverer and for the divine care and guidance which has directed our history. Wait a minute now. Isn't that against the First Amendment? Well, no, I guess it wasn't, since because the ACLU wasn't around then. So I think what we do here at Camp Constitution, our motto is to honor the past, honoring the past, teaching the present, preparing the future. And if we do not defend the memories of people like Columbus, we will lose our history, and we're one generation away. And that's why it's so important for us to learn about Columbus, not just Columbus, but other historical figures, and to let people know it, to tell them about it. And there's just so much good stuff out there. You know, it's interesting. Just a few days ago, I went down to the local supermarket, where there was the Knights of Columbus usually is out there raising funds and bringing, obviously, this is their, one of their big weekends, named, of course, in honor of Christopher Columbus. And there was two little boys, probably about 7 or 8 years old, and they had the Knights of Columbus vest on, and they sell the Tootsie Rolls. Not sure what the Tootsie Rolls have to do with Christopher Columbus. I'm sure there's some reason why they figure on Tootsie Rolls and not something else. But I had $2 left in my wallet, and I gladly gave them, these two boys, the $2 for the, and they gave me two Tootsie Rolls in for my little donation to the Knights of Columbus. So I'm really glad to see things like this. It reminds me of the goodness of America. There's still goodness out there, and it's important, as I said earlier, to keep the memory of Columbus going. Now, 2 years ago, I interviewed William Brown, and we went into a lot of detail about Christopher Columbus, and you can find that interview on our Podomatic site, podomatic.com. You know, just I guess you could find the archive there. And when I interviewed Steve Bias about a month ago, I don't know if we got into Columbus too much. We got more into George Washington, but I can't remember if we spoke too much about Columbus. So I'll have to look and see. But I also want to mention a few things too. We've been really busy. We at Camp Constitution have been very busy. We've got a lot on our plate the last several weekends. We did a parade in the Rossendale section of Boston on a Sunday, last Sunday. We had a great time. We distributed about 500 copies of the Constitution, and our float, it was beautiful. We had a float with two cannons, a colonial cannon and a Civil War cannon, and our people were dressed in colonial attire. And it was great. I don't know how many constitutions I passed out personally, but we had about six people participating. A lot of outreach, a lot of people learned about us for the first time. Lots of people took pictures of our float, and it was very gratifying. And the day before, we attended the Quiet Corner Tea Party, which is in the southeast corner of Connecticut. Had a great time there. And we've just been very busy, doing very productive things. And because of that, we got the attention of the left. Now, this is we've got plenty of media coverage over the last couple of years, mainly due to our Christian flag lawsuit. Oh, yeah, two weekends ago, we were at the Chinese Communist flag-raising ceremony in Boston. And because we dedicated a show to that. Earlier, with one of the attendees at the parade. But when you do things, when you're advancing the kingdom, when you're going against the cultural Marxist, you will get some pushback. What happened? Back in August, there was a restaurant in Presque Isle, Maine, that we've used for meetings over the years, and the owner told us that some people had called the headquarters of the restaurant, which was based in Bangor, and they said that they're renting out to a white supremacist organization. Nothing came of it. We were still able to go up to the restaurant. That wasn't an issue. But I thought, now, who would be doing this? Who would want to be, making up such lies? And then I was scheduled, which I did do, by the way, an event in the town of Appleton, Maine, thanks to a lovely family that had attended camp, our summer camp, our family camp last this year, and they wanted to help promote the camp program. So I gave a presentation. It would have been in the middle of September to commemorate Constitution Day, and the same thing happened. Lots of people, leftists, made phone calls to the library saying that we were white supremacist and that they should cancel the meeting, they shouldn't allow me to speak, and I was a white supremacist, and so forth and so on. And there was hints of violence. Of course, I'm thinking, well, the library trustees and our friend there, Jessica, she was one of the trustees, one of the only conservative trustees, and they were talking about the policy on guns. So I spoke. I called the librarian up, and I said, we live in an age where communication is pretty easy. You picked up a phone and talked to me and asked me what we were about. He didn't want to do that, of course. And two of the trustees were far leftist, and I got an email that they had sent around criticizing our position on climate change. So I sent an email to these folks mentioning all of the wonderful people of color, the blacks and Hispanics and Oriental people that participate at our camp program. I mentioned that we have nothing to do with racism, and I said that there are more people that in any given year that attend our camp than they have living in the town of Appleton, Maine, which has a black population of, I think, 0.5, with about 1,200 people. So I don't know if that's one or two or not a whole lot. So and I also challenged him on the climate change issue. I mentioned that one of our instructors, who's a top climate scientist, we said we had him in Maine last year. It was about the same time, and I think there were some news releases published. I said no one had a problem then, and I said anytime you want to have a debate, we'll be happy to bring them up, and we can debate the subject instead of these, you know, these smear can. Everybody must agree with climate change, or they have no validity. So I was a little concerned about potential trouble, but it got to the library. It was a full house, mainly supporters of ours and people who are interested in learning about the Constitution. I had a great presentation. We did have one triggered lady that came in halfway through, and she had absolutely no interest in what we were doing. She was just there to, I think, cause trouble, and she didn't have much of an impact, and she made a couple of stupid comments, and she mentioned the fact that Donald Trump was a violator of the First Amendment because he uses the term fake news. And my reply was that, I said he has every right, just like I do and you do, to criticize the media when it's justified. And I said, on the other hand, if he had ordered the arrest of reporters and journalists and then shut down the printing presses and, you know, websites of the media, then you have an issue, but you don't have one at this point. So anyway, just a few days ago, actually last week, I got a little note from the post office that said that I had some postage due. So I said, well, I went down there, and there was a package that was wrapped in some type of, it looked like a paper bag with my name on it, lowercase, spelled incorrectly. And the only postage was, well, it wasn't any postage. It looked like a little seal of some sort, and it was open. Half open, there were two books called Tax Target Washington. So I said, initially I thought someone was donating these to me. I thought, my goodness, I already have about 100 copies. I've been distributing these. I've been putting these in a lot of the little library boxes where you, you know, as free. And I had my little envelope, a little sticker on there, compliments of Camp Constitution with my mailing address. So one of the books, the dust jackets were on there. The pages were sliced up. And there was a dead rodent. I think it was flattened. It looked more like a rat, a small rat. So that's what we're getting. And my comment is that you have to expect this. We tried to follow suit, made a hate crime claim. I don't think the state's going to be too concerned. But I know that if I was a well-known leftist person and something like this would happen, this would be a hate crime. And the media would be all over the place, and I would probably have the governor of Massachusetts and the U.S. senators all here offering their help to, you know, to fight this hate. But because I'm an ideological second or third class citizen, there's no interest. Nothing here, folks. Move along. Well, anyway, we're out of time. I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank you for your support over the years, and until next week, may God bless you. You've been listening to Camp Constitution Radio on WBCQ The Planet.